member to include KPFT. Ensure your commitment to public broadcasting with the help of your attorney. A bequest is a very simple thing to put into place. If you need help or have questions, call our development director at 713-526-4000. That's 713-526-4000, extension 315. You can help to ensure that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Please name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Bites.
I just had that feeling that he was around. It's Flicked. He's back. He's back. Everybody jump for joy. Tonight's show will be completely done in Russian. Unfortunately, that means only Flicked will be talking.
Flicked's probably ready to stop talking Russian, I suspect.
Ready for some good old-fashioned English. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Peter Hughes.
You're going to wait.
Where's Flicked?
Inflicted.
Hey! I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Groovehouse is still manning the board because we had no confirmation that Inflicted was going to be here with us tonight. And of course, he can't hear us because he doesn't have any headphones on.
Soviet Russia, boardman's you.
Oh, these jokes won't get old. Not at all. All right, so we're glad you could tune in with us tonight here for Technology Bites. And let's see. Visit us online at geekradio.com. That's where we host all of the information about the show. You can hang out with us in IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. We hang out in the channel Tech Bites. You can also use our client. We have a Java-based client on the website at geekradio.com. There's also a link to listen to the live stream. I think it works on our site. I have to double-check that link. But if you want to listen to us on the internet, the links are at kpft.org. And the phone number is 713-526-5738. We will be taking calls on the show a little bit later on. It's unclear to me as to whether it will be Flicked screening the calls tonight or Groovehouse.
We might change chairs here in a little bit. I don't know.
Well, you know, I mean, I love seeing your face, Groovehouse, but it'd be great to have Flicked's head right back there where it belongs.
Of course it would.
Which looks a lot smaller and more clean shaven than I remember.
Can't even see this. Maybe a propaganda stunt.
It's just thinner.
I think he lost some weight.
Agreed.
That's right. Flicted has been on vacation or something. He's been out of the country in Russia.
Sabbatical,
off doing stuff.
Is that yours?
That's,
don't touch me there.
That's mine. Yes. Don't pull my cord.
All right, I'm gonna pull.
Don't yank
cord.
Nope. That's fine.
That's fine.
I think that's fine. All right. No, actually, that was me. You did unplug me. I think. Let me see. Hello. Yeah, that was mine.
All right.
Don't yank my chain, man. All right. So, wow, we're back to full crew. I'm so happy. I don't know what else to say. All right. So, I guess we're going to go ahead and hand it off to Peter Hughes in San Antonio with the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, of course, I was out for like the massive, you know, Apple announcement thing. But come on, I'm figuring if you're interested enough that you follow the news on this show, then I don't think I really have anything to add to the announcements from last week for the Apple stuff, as far as getting you up to speed on what's going on with that. So we'll move on to this week's stuff, which is totally on a different track, which is that Microsoft announced its Surface tablet platform at a hush-hush event in Los Angeles on this past Monday. And they also have announced Windows Phone 8 Apollo at its Windows Phone Summit in San Francisco. There were 8 specific platform updates for its upcoming mobile operating system, the Windows Phone 8. There's a new start screen. There's some hardware-related features like multi-core processor and memory card support. A revamped Internet Explorer 10, which is supposed to be very fast. Shared native code between Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 to make it easier for developers to port products. And especially it sounded like games. NFC support, that's at near field where you can, that's like the tap and pay. A new wallet hub, Nokia Maps instead of Bing Maps, and Windows Phone 8 for business. And actually this summer, apparently Microsoft will unveil even more end user features. But here's the things to look at, just come kind of an overview on Windows Phone 8 in case you're interested. It's going to have multi-core chips. It's a move that makes Windows Phone more competitive with iPhone and Android handsets, which obviously they've had multi-core for a while, so it's kind of required. When they launch, Windows Phone 8 devices will run on dual-core processors from Qualcomm, in case the brand of your multi-core is important. Here's one other thing that people, obviously, lately there's been a lot more talk about the screen resolutions on devices like tablets and such. Windows Phone 8 is going to have 3 screen resolutions. WVGA, which is 800x400, that's kind of typical. A 15:9 aspect ratio for that. That's 800x480. WXGA at 1280x769. And again, 15:9 ratio. And then finally, 720p at 1280x720 at 16:9. The rumor mill has it that there will be a 16:9, I'm guessing, potentially, I guess, megapixel, you know, HD iPhone, but we'll see what happens on that. Rounding out the hardware story, it's going to have a micro SD card expansion. And manufacturers will be able to, they don't have to, but will be able to include a micro SD slot so you can easily transfer information from device to device. That's different. Obviously, you don't have that kind of easy ability without using a computer on the Mac. And I guess depending on some of the Androids. Internet Explorer 10, like I mentioned, for Windows Phone 8. The new IE10 has smart screen and anti-phishing filter that uses data from Windows PCs to block malicious websites in real time. It also had a JavaScript update, so JavaScript is now 4 times faster than the browser in Windows Phone 7.5, and there's more HTML5 support, so that's always good. According to other mobile browsers on comparison, for JavaScript execution performance specifically, the IE10s apparently perform the best. So, like I mentioned, the shared code, it's not something that obviously a consumer is going to necessarily notice, but according to the person who announced the product, what's his name? Belfiore is his last name. There should be some, quote, freaking killer games this year. So I guess they have a lot of hopes on how easy it is to move things from one to the other, which that's very different from, particularly, I guess the only one, it doesn't really compare with Android because there's not a desktop operating system kind of directly connected to Android. But for Apple, I mean, Apple has a desktop OS and a mobile, and obviously they are kind of two very different things. They don't really, it's not, you can't really move stuff back and forth. The wallet experience, that's that NFC deal where it's the tap and pay kind of thing. It's NFC between phones, laptops, slates, and PCs, or near field communications. The wallet thing will allow users to store their credit and debit card information, third-party loyalty and membership cards, and coupons and deals. It's kind of like, obviously, from last week's Apple's iOS 6 Passbook app. But the difference, at least as far as what's announced so far, is Windows Phone Wallet. The Windows Phone Wallet experience will also support NFC Tap to Play, kind of like Google Wallet. But one fundamental difference, all of your credit and debit information will be stored in a secured SIM card, not in an on-device system. Google Wallet's built directly into a device, making it impossible to move your wallet info from one device to the next, but Windows Phone has opted for a more transition-friendly option. Apparently, it's also an approach that most carriers prefer, but don't get super excited because tap-to-pay type capabilities won't be into the United States until next year. At launch, the capability will be limited to the France-based Orange carrier. So if you're a big French, France fan, and you're going to go over there, then it could work for you. You will, U.S. consumers, though, will still be able to access the Wallet Hub as their central location for cards, third-party services, deals, etc. I mentioned Windows Phone 8 for Business. Obviously, Microsoft wants to heavily leverage its hold on the enterprise market that it has with Windows, and having a business-friendly Windows Phone platform. Windows Phone 8 will come with a complete security platform with secure boot and encryption, which is a derivative of Windows BitLocker. It's going to make app distribution and deployment flexible for businesses, offering up a mechanism for private distribution and full on-site management. Businesses will also be able to manage Windows Phone 8 devices through a software management system. And finally, Windows Phone 8 will run the Microsoft Office suite, although they didn't show off what it's going to look like. Finally, the new start screen, I mentioned that earlier. Visually, that's one of the most striking things that you hear people talking about with it. It's the most different thing. It has the live tiles, and it's made them more customizable, bringing new small size to the experience. Users will be able to choose between a small, medium, and large size for their live tiles, and now the entire screen on the start screen is available for live tile pinning. The arrow and empty space on the right-hand side have disappeared. To that end, users can pin more things on their start screen. And, of course, Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8 are tied closer together. As Microsoft said, they're, quote, better together, as all of them. This one is not unique to Microsoft, certainly. If you use all their stuff, then they say that's better together. Of course, so does Apple. So it's not all that new. There'll at least be 4 handset makers when the Windows Phone 8 operating system comes out later this year. Nokia, Samsung, HTC, and Huawei are planning phones to be ready for the launch. Microsoft said today, The four phones will be based on Qualcomm processors. They gave no other details at the event, which was targeted at software developers. But they plan, Microsoft plans to make Windows Phone 8 available in 50 languages and open the application store to customers in 180 countries. Another difference with, for instance, Apple is that software updates will be offered direct to the device, so users won't be required to connect their phone to a PC to perform an upgrade. Customers will have access to software upgrades for at least 18 months from the launch date of the device they purchase, Microsoft said. One thing is existing Windows Phone 7 handsets, they can't go to the new software. There is an upgrade to the current version, which is the current version 7.5 to one called version 7.8. Get it? 0.8. While lacking many of the important structural improvements, it will introduce the start screen, or a version of the start screen, so it'll at least kind of look like the new one. So shows Microsoft thinking a little bit. At least the people who bought in already will get to fake the new look. And then there was the Surface tablet stuff. This is Surface for Windows RT. They announced Surface for Windows with a tablet type operating system, and then Surface for Windows Pro. That was Steve Ballmer and company, I guess doing their best Steve Jobs. And they referred to these devices, the new Surface Windows, as tablets. So then there's some comparisons of the obviously it would make sense to look at that in comparison to the other tablets that are out there. The tricky thing is that the Surface Pro is the tablet that many Windows users think they've been waiting for. It's the one that can do anything a desktop can do. Surface Pro is serious. It really competes more with, I guess, Ultrabooks. It can run apps that you have already, graphics-intensive games and other tried-and-true Windows software, and has a serious laptop processor. It has Intel's Core series that can power through complicated work. But the price is not going to come in where you expect for a tablet. You know, the one thing is the iPad has set the points for tablets, and a 16-gig iPad is the base one for $499. And Microsoft, though, has said that Surface Pro's price will be more like that of an Ultrabook, which puts it more in the – now, they're not saying specifically, but they're saying it's more in that range, which puts it several hundred dollars more, probably around $700, which puts it near the price of a 64-gig iPad, and that is not a price that consumers have in their heads for a tablet. Also, it's 2 pounds, which is pretty dramatically heavier than most tablets. And on the other, just on putting a little more on this, the Surface Pro won't compete with top tablets in display resolution either. The Surface Pro will have a full HD display, meaning that it'll have at least 1920 by 1200 pixels like an HD TV does, which puts it on par with the best Android tablets from Asus and Acer, but because their displays are half an inch smaller, their pixel density should be better. I mean, there can be a problem with the size of the screen being slightly larger on the Microsoft Surface tablet because the pixels are more spread out. And none of these tablets' resolutions compare with the 2048 by 1536 pixel res of the iPads, the Retina display. Let's see. Against Ultrabooks, it competes very well, but so that kind of – the funny part is then that's sort of Microsoft competing with itself. Surface RT – so there's Surface Pro. That's kind of laptop-y. And then Surface RT, which is the more traditional tablet-oriented idea. It uses ARM-based processors. It's got more ports than most competing tablets, along with the ability to view two apps on one screen. Surface RT tablets will have at least 32 gigs of storage as opposed to the 16 gig level that the iPad and many Android tablets start at. They won't have the high iPad's high resolution. One thing it will have is what's called an optically bonded display, which eliminates the annoying air gap between the screen and the glass, which should give clearer images, improved contrast, and reduced screen glare. So that's cool. They also all come with a comfortable built-in kickstand. In other words, you don't have to buy like a case thing to make it stand up on its own, you know, at an angle so that you can look at it, which, you know, if that's compelling, then good for you. Surface RT runs into some trouble on other metrics. Its weight turns out to be 1.5 pounds on the current estimate, which is just 0.06 pounds heavier than the current iPad. Android tablets, by contrast, are consistently moving towards lighter weight. It'll be the Surface RT at 1.5 pounds would be about 0.2 pounds heavier than the Toshiba Excite 10.1, or the Asus Transformer Prime. Also, this one's an interesting one. Microsoft lists the Surface RT's display as HD rather than as full HD. There's an interesting distinction, which may mean a resolution of just 1366 by 768, and that's not going to be competitive. You know, the expensive full-on, you know, pro one isn't competing with the iPad, and this one is even farther away. So, you know, it's not clear. You know, obviously it's going to be up to who purchases what. Surface RT might not be an iPad killer. The apps are going to have a lot to do with it. And so consumers may shy away from Surface RT. It may be useful for some of the business crowd, although Surface Pro might be the one that's really compelling to them. Why purchase a classic clamshell-type laptop if you can get a tablet that becomes a laptop when you need one, all without sacrificing, you know, any performance or any of that? The biggest challenge is that the only thing that's a limiter on that one, as far as having the keyboard, and, you know, it has the keyboard and all those things, but is that the screen is 10.6 inches, where a laptop obviously does a little better. But this is certainly, Microsoft is making a serious swing at the tablet market. And it'll be interesting to see how that comes out and see what, obviously the proof is in the, you can announce whatever you like. The proof is in the, launch. And when the products come out, I am sure that everybody's going to be looking at them closely and seeing how compelling they are and what kind of price they come at. And I guess also importantly, what else gets released by the Android crowd and by iPad, in their next revs, as far as competing with, you know, what Microsoft's doing. They have a moving target here. And so I think that could be one of the biggest challenges too. And then finally, this one's kind of fascinating. You know, this does go on the Apple announcement, but they didn't talk about this. And at the announcement thing, but, you know, other than indirectly, Otherworld Computing got a hold of a Retina MacBook Pro. That's the pretty expensive new, you know, high-res monitor, you know, high-res, you know, Retina display, laptop from Apple, and hooked and showed it capable of displaying images on up to 4 screens at one time. They produced a photo to demonstrate, it shows the Retina MacBook Pro driving its main screen, 2 Thunderbolt full-size monitors, and a 3rd dedicated monitor hooked up via HDMI. So, you know, they don't all hook up exactly the same way. In all, the Test Pro is said to have pushed out about 15.6 megapixels in real time. Apple's own documentation quietly mentioned support for this kind of setup, but this makes the MacBook Pro the first Apple, at least, to support 4 simultaneous displays outside of a tower system like a Mac Pro, you know, where you could, you know, fill more slots with video cards, or I guess some of the, I know that out of the box, if you had the dual video card system, you could drive 4 monitors. So that's the fascinating piece is, obviously, this gives Apple, it gives their laptop the capability that was, at least in the Apple world, was limited to desktops, to serious desktops for a long time, and now it's in something you can carry around. The flip side, of course, is if you've looked at the prices, it costs like an expensive desktop. So you're carrying, you know, it's very similar in price actually to the Mac Pro when you really start getting down to it. So it'll be interesting to see how many people really swing for the big boy, and then you add the price of those monitors, and you're talking about a serious expensive setup. And that's the news.
All right. Thanks for the news. And, we were just catching up with Flicted on a Russia story, so we didn't pay a lot of attention. So if we repeat anything that you covered in the news, we apologize. Dwight, you're supposed to respond verbally.
Yes.
So I was watching your tweeting about the announcement from Microsoft.
Yes, the Surface.
Peripherally paying attention to you, like yes. You do to Pete when he does the news.
Yes, because he just talked a lot about it, too.
Yeah. Well, you had commented on the concept of it being a game changer for Microsoft to produce their own hardware.
Well, yes, because, you know, the traditional Microsoft... the traditional Microsoft business model is we make this lovely operating system, you license it, you put it on your PCs, you do with the PCs what you like and sell them, and, you know, that's it. It's a very, very symbiotic relationship. Well, Microsoft has never competed directly by making its own PCs. Occasionally, it has shown off some interesting, like, prototypes that it kind of was playing around with, but, you know, in back rooms and at trade shows and so, but they've never actually done it. Well, essentially, with this thing, the Surface tablet, Microsoft is basically saying, you know, we don't like what we're seeing out there from the PC manufacturers. We don't think that what they're doing lives up to what Windows 8 can do, so we're going to make it ourselves. And, you know, to a certain extent, you could say, well, Google does that with the Nexus line with Android, but Google does it with the first generation, makes this very limited device, and then hands it off. There's no big, like, presentation or here we come event like they did with this. And, you know, obviously, Reuters today said that there was a really good Reuters story where basically they said that the hardware partners didn't know about this until a couple of days before the announcement, that some of them, like Acer and Asus, learned about it from the press conference. And Steve Ballmer, when asked by All Things D at the event, you know, what do your hardware partners think about this? How do they feel about this? He just said no comment. So they're essentially, but you have to think about what's interesting is the reason why Microsoft does this. You know, for years, these PCs have been made with junkware and crapware, and they're not very interesting. They're all kind of commodity products. And Apple, in terms of, like, buzz and mindshare, is eating the PC industry's lunch. Their profits are much higher. Their growth is much higher than the rest of the PC industry. And I think Microsoft was pretty much just sick of it. And so they've said, we're going to show you how it's done, son. And that's what they're doing. And obviously, you know, they waited until after CES and after all these other companies said, we're coming out with this Windows 8 tablet. So now they're on the record as saying doing it. So now they just can't walk away and say we're not going to do it because Microsoft is. Microsoft will only sell this in their own retail stores or online. So that, I think, is a bone thrown to the industry. But this really changes the relationship. There's an analyst, Patrick Moorhead, who used to work for AMD, who basically said that, you know, the relationship now between Microsoft and its hardware partners is completely different. This changes that completely. And I imagine down the road here on Texas 249 at the HP campus where they design most of HP's PCs, they're probably not real happy right now with Microsoft.
So do we think that crapware maybe is one of the reasons why Microsoft products are considered
Microsoft
to be less
hates
expensive?
It.
Well, I know they hate it, but right. I mean, if I'm a hardware manufacturer, if I'm a Dell or an HP or an Acer or somebody, and I can sell you this hardware, but I've subsidized my cost because I've pre-installed all this junk that I'm getting paid from the software vendors to put on the computer, do
right.
you think that has an impact on the cost of that PC
definitely,
to the end?
Definitely. I mean, you know, look at Apple's business model. So Apple does not put crapware on the machine. Apple insists on a certain level of profit, and they don't do the race to the bottom. The PC industry does the race to the bottom. They do, you know, what most people can afford. And to get there, they use a lot of the same components that Apple does, right? But to get there, they have to subsidize, they have to cut down on the cost. So they cut back on service. You know, they outsource a lot of their service. You know, in most cases, most people don't feel that the Windows PCs customer care is as good as Apple's. They do the crapware gaming. You can find McAfee or Norton on almost any of those machines, and they pay to put that on there. Norton and McAfee pay the PC vendors to put it on there. In addition, the PC vendors, in order to make themselves look different from each other, put all kinds of applications on there that kind of duplicate Windows. So a real popular one is something to make it easier to connect to Wi-Fi networks. But Windows already has a really nice application for connecting to Wi-Fi networks. But for some reason, Toshiba and Sony feel like they need to slap that on there, make it easier. That conflicts with what's on Windows. It slows the machine down, running in the background. What's interesting is that Microsoft, in its stores, they sell, in their retail stores, sell PCs, notebooks, desktops.
And they're all crapware free.
They're crapware free. They go to the vendors, if you want to sell it in our stores, we want a special load that only has the minimum amount on there. So they have the software that's required to run certain hardware features, and that's it. Microsoft does put its Windows Live Essentials and so forth on there, but those are fully functional applications, although they're not necessarily you know, as robust as Office.
It's like a starter pack if you don't have anything else. All you have is a PC. It's enough to get you bootstrapped.
Right. Do we have you checked the prices? Are they more expensive to buy that PC from the...
Yes, they're a little more expensive. You don't see the same, you know... Places like Best Buy and Micro Center are constantly running sales and reduce the prices of them, and they do that because they're able to get deals from the manufacturers because they're working subsidized devices. At the Microsoft store, the prices that you see on there are not subsidized, and they don't often do sales there. You go in, you get the experience, you buy the machine, you get a really good support from Microsoft. You can walk in there and do a Genius Bar thing just like you can at the Apple store. And so you get a kind of a better overall experience. And for years, Microsoft has been going to its OEM partners. Whenever they release a new version of Windows, they say, please don't junk it up this time. That happened with Vista. That happened with Windows 7. And, you know, it just doesn't work. Hasn't worked. So I think Microsoft is finally saying, okay, we're going to do it the way we think it should be done.
Are they going to do that with more than just the slate? Are they going to do desktops?
I don't think so, because the future of computing is portable. Mm-hmm. They may end up, I could see them doing like a Surface Ultrabook that's a touch Ultrabook that's like an actual Ultrabook. Although the touch type cover are, those essentially make it an Ultrabook.
I'd be interested to see what this, what effect this has on that whole conversation about, you know, well, Apple's so expensive. You know, if they release the slate that comes out at the same price point as the iPad, or you think it's going to be more expensive because it's kind of a laptop?
There has been some discussion that in order to not completely piss off the hardware makers, that it'll come in a little bit more expensive. And keep in mind, you know, people talk about, oh, the iPad is expensive, but before it was announced, people thought the iPad would be $800 or $900. So the idea that the starting device is $500, $499, and the iPad 2, which is still for sale, is $399. That's not actually that expensive, relatively speaking, for what you get. And other manufacturers making a 10-inch computer with similar specs to the iPad have not had much success hitting that price point. They do it if they make a broadband-capable tablet that is subsidized by the carriers.
By the carrier, right.
See? But it's very, you know, you don't see a lot of them out there that are of very high quality at that price.
Did Pete talk about the Google device, the 7 tablet? What are they calling it? The Nexus 7, I believe.
Well, that again, that's all rumored. You know,
I heard it wasn't so rumor. Is it?
Well,
is it really,
Google. Has
you asked if Pete talked about it. Did you talk about it, Pete?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to make sure. You know.
It is. It's the Google has said we're going to do a tablet device. That's about all they've said. And, you know, leaks have indicated that it's a 7-inch tablet. And it'll be, you know, they'll essentially do a Nexus line. There'll probably be, there may even be a Nexus Chromebook. Although the current crop of Chromebooks are pretty nice. I would not expect to see, a Microsoft Surface desktop. I don't think that'll happen.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. I'm happy to talk about something that's not Microsoft or Slate. We're confusing all the people that think we're Apple fanboys talking so much about Microsoft here. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, it looks like we have somebody on hold.
We do have someone in the queue. And we have room for more, so if you have a computer question, give us a call. 713-526-5738. Are we ready for the first call?
We are.
All right, then. Up first on the show, we're going to take George.
George, you're on the air.
Hi. Excuse me. This is kind of directed more toward Barrett, but I called a few weeks ago, and I was saying I'm having difficulty getting my CD burner to work. It's a SATA CD burner in my Windows XP computer. And he told me to check the device manager and all that, and I couldn't find it in the device manager. But I was able to get the device to work by getting something called a PCI to SATA adapter. And it works doing it that way. Excuse me, but there's still this desire. I need to know why my native SATA jacks on my motherboard still aren't working. And I heard the playback of the show later on, and Barrett said he found an article about that on Windows Fix It or something like that. And I can't find that article. I'm wondering if you will tell me that. Tell me about that.
Tell you what, I'm going through. I can't remember what browser I was on when I found that. Although I think I've got your email address. I can definitely email you back. I can go through last Wednesday's history and see exactly what I was looking at.
Actually, it was Wednesday before last. It was 2 weeks
ago. Oh, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have found it then last Wednesday. All right.
Yeah, I talked to Jay earlier in the week, and he was going to send you my email address.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, that's, I think, the question, if I remember this, the question that I asked Jay was, I found this, and there was an actual fix-it thing where you click through, and I believe my question was, like, is that actually valid? Does that stuff actually work?
Yes.
But
yes.
It sounds like, I mean, if everything is working through the PCI adapter, but the SATA drives weren't working, you know, natively off the main board, it sounds like they could be bad on the main board, you know. I would also just, you know, try and update the firmware on the main board, too, just to make sure. But I'll look for it and I'll email it. Does your last name start with a T?
Yes.
Okay, I've got your email address.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you then.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye, George.
All right. 713-526-5738. All of the lines are open right now. We could have Flick to tell us a story about Russia. What was the most... Let me ask Flick about... Okay, your month in Russia... Did it seem like everything was like 1950s spy tech, or how did it feel like, you know, in terms of technology while you were there?
No, for the most part, a lot of people had iPhone 4 or 4S's. I definitely saw like old cars that I wouldn't see anywhere else, like old like Ladas and... I mean, stuff that you don't see around, but also a lot of new cars and crazy people on motorcycles drive crazy there. Actually, people in cars drive pretty crazy there, too.
Were there any modified cars like
a lot of racers and a lot of custom paint jobs with like crazy paint stuff. I think for the first time I saw a car that was completely chromed.
Wow.
Like professionally completely chromed.
That's illegal in the States only because the sun can reflect off and blind other drivers.
Yeah,
but that's expensively, it's just silly anyway.
I'm pretty sure there nothing is illegal as long as you're willing to pay for it.
I like the part on Twitter where you got the honor of voting for Vladimir Putin like four times while you were there.
Have you found a good source of millet now that you're back in Houston?
No, I haven't actually looked for millet.
You can get it at the bird store. They have it in bins.
Yeah, when I first looked it up, I was like, I don't know what this stuff is that I'm eating.
And, is it like an oatmeal, or how do they serve it?
Yeah, it's like a porridge. Like oatmeal or rice or whatever, like a breakfast
millet.
Yeah, and so she said what it was in Russian, and I looked it up, and it said millet, and I'm like, okay, I'm not sure exactly what that is. So I looked it up, and yeah, it was like, oh yeah, this is food that's eaten by, you know, some people, but in the Americas, it's generally used for bird fodder, or for, it said for fodder, but yeah, it was all right.
You sound tired, afflicted.
I'm still probably kind of jet lagged.
How many days have you been back in the USA?
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, we didn't even know if you were coming in tonight.
Yeah.
Like, we thought you weren't.
Yeah, I don't think I've tweeted anything since I got back.
You haven't tweeted anything, you know, the last couple of days.
Yeah.
You were very, very quiet on the whole social media scene. We were happy to see pictures, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do have a lot more pictures.
Okay.
Than just the ones I posted.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT. Afflicted does sound tired.
It does. It
sounds like he needs a radio nap.
Sounded like I sounded after I installed Windows 7 Home Premium. You've got to reboot a million times.
Really?
For all the different device drivers. Yeah, I got a main board that had like a lot of onboard things, everything from Wi-Fi to Bluetooth to whatever, but you would install the drivers, and even with Windows 7, it still wants to reboot between drivers to recognize everything. So, I mean, I was installing Windows for the better part of 4 hours. Like, it took me less time to do the full system.
Did you capture an image when you were done?
Yeah, actually. I got a picture.
Not a photo. I mean, like a drive
image. Oh, no. I did do a backup, though. So I've got the full backup, yeah.
So you can restore.
Yeah, backup to another drive. So I can, yeah, I can restore. I can do everything. I thought you meant, did I take a picture? Hey, it's done.
Yeah, no, bleak. No, I meant.
Here's my backup.
It's still, by the time you add all the drivers, all the patches, you know, I don't know how.
A lot, about four Windows updates where you had to reboot between the different sets of updates you had to take.
So were you working with an original Windows 7 image, or was this the latest, like, latest retail?
That is latest retail. Huh. I've downloaded digitally to get the newest. Even then, I think they still make you go through some. But I mean, I'm not singing the merits of Linux. I'm just saying, once it's installed, you do like a yum update or your package manager choice update, and it does everything, no reboots.
Right.
That's all, and you can walk away from it. That's the thing. I wouldn't mind 4 hours if I could go do something with my 4 hours. I didn't have to sit there and babysit it and wait for it to pop up, you know, the next little dialogue window.
In terms of drivers, Windows 7 does a great job with installing them without a reboot. For the most part, when you do like a video update in Windows 7, graphics driver update, no reboot.
This may have just been because there were a lot of low-level mainboard drivers, you know, that were coming off one of the CDs, but it was even, you know, the CD that Asus had actually put together, and they were the ones causing all the reboots, too. So it wasn't like I was just doing it on my own and saying, I think I'll reboot just to make sure. It was forcing system reboots in between each of the different driver packs.
So you used a CD as opposed to going to...
I did both. I got it kickstarted because I didn't even have Ethernet drivers when I started out. So
oh,
I had to
really?
Get Ethernet, yeah, I had to
Windows
get Ether-
7 didn't find them?
No. No, I think it's a fairly newish board, but yeah. It found there are two different, I think, Ethernet cards on there. Now, it found the wireless
stuff. It could have found them and downloaded them. Oh, wait, no Ethernet.
No, he said it found the wireless.
It found the wireless, but I hadn't plugged the antenna in yet, because there's actually antennas that connect to the main board on this, which is kind of cool.
See, because what I would have done was gotten, if you had any of it working, get that working, and then let Windows go out, because it'll find the latest drivers, mm-hmm. which may not be on that set.
I trust Windows, but I also trust the fact that, you know, the manufacturers gave me this. So just to get it out the door, I hear you, but I always like to go to the manufacturer's site versus let Windows just install whatever Windows wants.
Windows 7 is a lot better at it.
Okay. We're gonna have to work on our trust. I think. but the main thing is, I mean, I've got a working Windows install after 2 days. It hasn't been blown away by something else. So we'll see. We'll see.
713-526-5738 if you want to share your own Windows installation experience or talk about something else. Groovehouse, looks like we have a call in the queue.
We do.
Who is it and what do they want?
All right, up next, we're going to let Bill let us know what he wants.
All right, Bill, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Let's see here. Windows 7, I did an install. I built a computer about 6 months ago, and... I hooked up like four internal drives, and then I installed it, and everything seemed to be going okay till, I don't know, about a month or 6 weeks ago, something like that. But before I go on, I read a forum post. A guy said you shouldn't hook up any drives except the main drive and then install Windows and then connect your other drives.
I agree with that.
Okay.
I agree with that. I you know, when I've installed operating systems on the multi, if you don't pay close attention to what's going on, you know, you boot from the CD, it looks at the drives, they don't have a drive letter assigned, it can make some bad decisions.
Right,
for you.
You either have to, you have to know what your
primary drive
what
is.
Your primary drive and what you want it to be. And you have to be able to recognize the way Windows shows it in the setup. And so you may be able to do that.
Right.
But if you don't, you could end up like with your operating system on drive D.
It's more of a safety measure than right.
Yeah, it gets so to avoid the confusion, and it's better to just, you know, put in your main drive and then install all that, then add your ancillary drives later.
Okay. I got Windows on the SSD drive. Okay, so if I know it's on the SSD, I mean, it can't put some stuff on another drive or anything. If I mean, it's not an issue, is it? Or it can put like some drivers on the wrong drive?
No. Windows and all of the drivers and stuff like that will go on whatever drive has been determined to be your operating system drive.
Okay, so it's on the SSD. So that went okay then, huh?
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing.
Okay. But what's been going on the last 6 weeks or so is programs get to a point where they're not responding for 10 to 30 seconds. And I did some playing around, and I thought I narrowed it down to Western Digital backup software that was running in the background. And I shut it off, and it seemed like things got okay for several days, maybe a week, and then the last couple of days it started doing it a little bit again. And I ran virus on all the drives with Windows Security Essentials, you know, thorough drive scans, and nothing came up. But another thing that happened is I haven't been able, for probably 3 months, been able to burn a Windows image. It'll generally go all the way through, and it'll, you know, for
what do you mean burn a Windows image?
Well, with Windows backup software, it'll say, do you want to do an image too? And I'll say yes, and it goes all the way through like it's going to do it, and at the very end it'll
where are you writing that image off to?
An external or an internal and external drive I was trying to.
Hmm. Well, one of the problems could be, you know, when you're dealing with a computer that you built, we have to operate under the assumption, and that it's not always true, that you built it correctly. You know, that you've got everything, that's all the components are designed to work together, they're properly installed, and they're properly configured. Because if you've got something out of whack there, it can cause you to have problems like what you're describing. So it's really hard to diagnose on a home-built computer. Dwight's our master builder. He's one that's built the most PCs. When you're troubleshooting a computer that you built yourself for performance issues, what is your recommendation?
Well, the recommendation is, in terms of, like, as you're building it, or
he's already built it.
Right.
It was working fine for a while, but now it's starting to, like, you know, kind of have some performance issues. It's not, doesn't sound like it's that old or anything. So, is it likely that it's a software issue, or is it possible that he's got some hardware driver issues or something like that going on?
Well, it depends on what he's done with the software. I mean, if you've added a lot of complexity to it, it's very likely it's the software. If you have how many drives do you have? You mentioned
now I've got like six internal drives.
Oh, see, now we're talking Frankenstein computer.
Right,
here.
Right.
Pull them all out.
Get at that point.
Pull everything off of the SSD and see if you still have issues. That's the first.
Yeah,
thing
there you
do.
Go. That's a good diagnostic step there. Take all those other drives, disconnect them, and see how it does just running off that SSD drive. See, this is where we get into the confusion. It's like when you build your own PC, I don't know what you've got under the hood. For whatever reason that you came up with to install six hard drives into this computer, that gives me some.
It could even be if you don't have a beefy enough power supply, if all six drives spin up and try and seek at the same time, you could have a dip in power that could also mess with the main board and throw things off.
Right.
I mean, there are
what kind of variables
here.
How powerful is your power supply?
It's a Corsair 850-watt.
It should be able to handle that. Although, again, you know, you're pushing the limits of PC complexity with that.
And sanity.
And sanity, right, exactly. So what I would do, actually going back to building it, when I build a PC, I put the memory on the motherboard, I connect the power supply, I connect the graphics card and the processor, and that's it, and I boot it and see if it'll boot. And if it all boots and you get to the screen and you don't, and it complains not having an operating system, okay, you know that works. Then you put it in the case, you connect the power, you know, you connect up everything else, and you get it just like one drive, your basics, you load the operating system, does it work? And then you let it run that way for a few days. Don't do anything else. And then you start adding stuff to it. If you want to add other drives, add the other drives.
Didn't you add six drives?
Well, I had a...
You just have some laying around?
Five's not enough, man.
Well, no. I do video, some video stuff, and then I had a SimpleTech drive. I think, Jay, you said that you have one where it's two...
Yeah, two. That's an external hard drive with two hard drives in it, right?
Yeah, and it was acting up, so I got it out of the case, and I didn't have anything to do with them, so I figured, why not just have some extra, you know?
Well, why they were acting up is because the drives were bad. Maybe you took defective hardware and added it to your system.
I could have.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like where I would go first is to take those ancillary drives out and go down to a minimum system and then see if it starts performing better for you.
Okay.
And then, you know, unless you really need to have all those drives in there, you know, consider connecting them into external bays or something. But it gets difficult to troubleshoot these Frankenstein computers, but it could be any number of things going on here. But sounds to me like you may have added some bad hardware or just, you know, maybe asking too much of the machine. So I'd go back a couple of steps to see if you can get the computer to perform the way you want it to. All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight. Bye.
I learned that thing about simplicity the hard way the last time I built my machine. I'll never. I used to just throw everything in.
I could see the desire to say, well, ooh, I've got all these scraps. Let me just throw those in there. I've got this computer with seven hard drives and an SSD drive. Yeah, I don't know.
The whole is not always larger than the sum of its
parts. I've got three hard drives in my current computer. One of them I use as a backup, as just a drive that everything goes to the backup on. Another is actually kind of like a... I'll put it there when I just want to kind of set something aside, and that's almost empty. And then I have like a 1 terabyte drive. This is on my Windows machine, and 1 terabyte. And most of that space, I could probably make do with just that. And there are times when I just think, I'm just going to simplify it and just rip out everything but the backup drive and everything extra but the backup drive, and I think it's simple is always better.
All right, 713-526-5738 as we do approach the top of the hour, though, so we're getting close to that time where we're going to have to consider taking a little station break. But if we got a call in the next few minutes, we might be able to answer that for you real quick. 713-526-KPFT. While we're waiting for you to dial the phone, though, I have a question for Pete and for Dwight. Do we have any idea what the future of the iMac might hold in terms of, if they announce a new one, how much better it might be than what's out there right now?
Pete, you go first.
I guess it's a... Looking at what they've done with the MacBook Pro, I think can give you some hints as to possibilities for the iMac. The deal is they either are going to make it have dramatically better features, where perhaps a higher resolution screen or going with SSD. I would think with some rejiggering, they probably could have like a dual drive setup in there with like an SSD and then a regular hard drive for, you know, larger scale storage, would be kind of elegant. With Thunderbolt and that, you know, if a MacBook Pro, the I mentioned this in the news, the new Retina display laptop can drive four displays, including the, you know, Retina display that's on it. So you can hook three additional displays up with no other adapters. Basically, you do two Thunderbolts and an HDMI, and it would be surprising if they refreshed the iMac and didn't give you that kind of capability on that platform.
So I'm definitely getting where I'm wanting a new computer, and I was thinking about replacing my iMac, or I was wondering if it would be enough difference in what's coming out as opposed to just taking advantage of obviously buying the computer that exists today is the computer in the hand is better than the one that you speculate on. But when you're talking about a capital expense or, you know, purchase like this, you want to not spend too much money and then find out you could have waited 6 months or 2 months and spent a couple hundred dollars more.
They released a 27-inch iPad on a stand.
I would say wait until you hear Barrett's just really ready to buy one.
Yeah, wait until I
buy one if he had the money.
Oh, as soon as Barrett buys something new, I'll just wait a week from there. So we're probably looking at some type of iPhone announcement in the September, October time frame. They wouldn't combine that with any other.
That would be a standalone thing. The way.
Yeah.
Probably what they would do, what they've been doing with their desktops is if there's no major design change, they just announce they're selling new desktops, and that's just a press release. The problem with the iMac and a Retina display is the cost. I mean, obviously, the MacBook Pro is really expensive.
Right. Now, I didn't imagine I'd want an iMac with a Retina display of the size that I'm going to want. It's going to be cost prohibitive.
Right. And so I don't think actually that, you know, either what they'll do is they'll make the 21-inch a Retina display, or they'll sell some ridiculously priced 27-inch, you know. But there's a possibility, given the size of it, and if they can't get the cost down, that the next MacBook, the next iMac may not be a Retina display.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm less worried about the Retina display, although that probably looked pretty awesome for photography. But just want to make sure I get it good. I mean, I'm already feeling kind of the pinch on my iMac now in terms of processing these large image files and wanting to have something that's a little bit zippier.
So have you tried doing a clean install of OS X and starting over, OS X starting over?
Not yet, but that's on the agenda for both my laptop and my desktop.
I've been thinking about it, but...
All right, so getting ready to do our little station break. There's nobody in the queue. If you want to be up for the second hour of the show, call 713-526-5738. You are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Yeah.
He's afflicted. I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's...
Groovehouse.
Yay! Yeah.
The Committee for Youth and Non-Military Opportunities is a nonprofit corporation that provides literature to high school students on military recruitment and alternative opportunities. The organization is having a sock hop to raise funds for literature. The event will be June 16th at the Live Oak Friends Meeting Center, 1318 West 26th Street, from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Members of the Houston Swing Dance Society will be giving dance lessons, so come early. Dress up or dress down in your favorite 50s attire and come to dance. For more information, contact Libney at 832-466-1342. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, 90.1 Radio for Peace.
Are Are you interested in volunteering at KPFT? If so, come to our volunteer training session Friday, June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. located at KPFT Pacifica Radio, 419 Lovett Boulevard. We have opportunities in the news department and graphic design. In the production department, you can learn radio engineering or production assistance, fundraising, groundskeeping, building maintenance, or meet people and help us at any of the many events that KPFT does in the community. Add KPFT to your resume. Show the world you give of yourself and your time. Go to kpft.org and fill out a volunteer request form. Or call Anthony at 713-526-4000, extension 301. Come to the volunteer training session at the station on June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. You're listening to KPFT.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. Before the dub, we had the BBS, as in bulletin board system, as in not yet the net as we now know it, as in dialing directly modem to modem, as in which I'm probably butchering as badly as I'm going to butcher this last name, Wackenschwanz, or Wackenschwanz.
Wackenschwanz.
Wackenschwanz. Thanks, yes. Dwight. As in David E.,
yes.
Not to be confused
yes.
with David E. Anyway, okay. Got it out of my system, I think. David Wackenschwanz. E. Wackenschwanz, who signed out of this world, sadly, on Saturday, June 2nd, was actually the topic of an article that our own Dwight Silverman wrote all the way back in 1996. So without giving away all this week's Barrett time, do you have any recollection of that, Dwight?
Dave, ran the BBS list.
Yeah,
right?
Dave was the man who gave us the Atomic Cafe.
Took the list over from him, and he kind of didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, BBS that acted as a clearinghouse for other BBSs.
Yeah, I was a member of Atomic Cafe.
He was. Oh, yeah, cool. So was I. He's a great guy. Yeah. Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the notice this weekend. We were informed that he passed away on Sunday.
Oh,
we had the notice on Monday or Tuesday.
Now, for those not quite in the know as to what a BBS is or was, it's a system designed to hold not packets, but postcards or pieces of paper. Of course, that's the cork version. The digital version started popping up in the late 70s and actually did use packets in 128-byte denominations, at least if you were connecting to a bulletin board system that used the ubiquitous X-modem protocol. Developed in 1977, it's still a protocol contained in Microsoft's Hyperterm some 35 years later. So to get us back on track, we have to go back to the days when the number of concurrent sessions you could host was not a function of your server hardware and bandwidth, but rather directly tied to the number of working telephone lines and modems you had connected to the server running the BBS software. If your resource was busy, you'd have to come back late at night when no one else was dialed in. Finding bulletin boards was a tough prospect as well, as there wasn't a Google to track down and index everything for you. And that was where the Atomic Cafe came in. Apart from being a community in and of itself, the Atomic Cafe BBS was a clearinghouse for listings of other BBSs in existence at that time, like the Matchmaker BBS, which eventually became Matchmaker.com, not Match.com. You can always tell who the pioneers are. They're the ones with the arrows in their backs. Each bulletin board was usually ran by a single dedicated system operator with any possible combination of hardware and software. The Atomic Cafe spent a number of years on TBBS, which stood for the Breadboard System, highly configurable BBS server software package that ran on the TRS-80 line of personal computers. The software package was published by eSoft, who later went on to create the iPad. What? An iPad is an Internet Protocol adapter, a piece of software that brought dial-in BBSs into the Internet Protocol age. You can now telnet into a BBS. So this BBS breakthrough was also what caused the BBS downfall. With companies like Neosoft, MCI, and AT&T getting into the Internet game, the need for discrete dial-in bulletin board systems were gone. That's right. Daily killed your board. Actually, Neosoft...
Wasn't me, it was Carl Leonbauer. I blame him.
Actually, Neosoft started life as Sugarland Fido in 1986, its own BBS. Some other interesting BBS names at that time, you had the Mailbox in Abilene, 2,400 baud, blazingly fast. Second, Sanctum in Dallas, Poseidon in El Paso. You had Etsy's MedNet in San Antonio. In Houston, we had Stormy Weather, Chameleon, Space City, BBS, Bayou Beastie, and Hobbit's Hideaway.
The Corova Milk Bar, which ran on Waffle. That was, and it was only the only BBS I know of that was run by a woman. I mean, I know there were others, but there was a woman who ran the Corova Milk Bar.
Wow. If you've ever found yourself wasting precious minutes perusing the collateral damage of a flame war, or if you've had the extreme misfortune of taking place in one, you have the early BBSers to thank. And a big thanks to George T. for tipping us off to this man's passing. That's it for your E. That's that for Barrett time.
So where was he? What, was he still here?
He was in California, I think, and I think it was a pretty big heart attack.
He died of a massive heart attack, yes. At 57.
Or in Ohio, possibly, wasn't he?
57.
Mm-hmm.
At 57 years of age. I remember when, I'll admit it, I committed some cyber crimes when I was younger. I'm sure the statute of limitations. Well, actually, I attempted to commit some cyber crimes when I was younger, but it didn't work out because by the time I got interested in computer gaming, a lot of computer games took as many as 5 to 8. 5 1/4 floppy disks to load.
It's 3 days of downloading.
That was a long... And first of all, you had to get through on the BBS. If it was only a one-line BBS, you know, you use a lot of busy signal, redial, and you'd finally get in. And you'd download, you know, the I guess it was a zip file. It was not RAR, it was probably
zip. Old zip files.
Zip
files.
Zip,
it was way back.
For each disk that you would pull down... And so you might get disk 1 and 2 in a night, and then you have to dial in, you know, spend another week getting online again to get the next couple of disks. So there was some great game I wanted.
Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh, Leisure Suit Larry was just one disk. This was a...
like Ultima 4.
Yeah. With apologies to Richard Garriott, dude. So BBS is... I remember the first BBS that came along that was actually sporting a 36.6 modem. That,
wow.
And my 14.4 modem would no longer connect to it. There was a compatibility issue.
It would negotiate down,
or my modem wasn't capable of doing it, because we were, you know... And so I bought my first 36.6 modem, and that was awesome.
Wow. Getting excited over a new modem.
Yeah, and then my first excursion onto the internet for reals was a NeoSoft shell account, FreeBSD shell account on Starbase.neosoft.com.
Yeah, here's the story that I wrote from September 29th, 1996 on the Atomic Cafe
closing. Yeah.
Right, and way to bring me down, guys.
I'm sorry.
You were all perked up when you heard his name, but you didn't see that coming.
I didn't see it coming, no.
You know your favorite hero? They're gone.
Remember that thing you love? It
no
doesn't
more.
Exist.
Oh, man.
Well,
so cruel.
Make sure that gets posted to the site, too. I had high hopes that you would come up with some good Barrett time for that when I forwarded it to you, but I realized, too, that it was several days ago. But, yeah, so what did your story say about the closing? Did you find it?
Yes. It was really about the end of kind of the dwindling of computer bulletin boards at the time. This was in 96, and already the World Wide Web had been around for about 3 years, and already it was decimating the bulletin boards.
And I'm joking around, but bulletin boards were mostly text back then. You could download wares, you could get some images, but you know everything when you went on there was ASCII art because the connection speeds were so slow.
Right.
And what heralded in the birth of the internet was that same 33.6K modem that you bought, which let you get the faster connection speeds. The internet took a lot more bandwidth, and
same thing
that brought that in killed the BBSs.
And bulletin boards. For a while, they were trying to do things that competed. Just about the same time as the commercial internet came online in 90, there was this network of bulletin boards called FidoNet, and you were able to transfer files and access boards across FidoNet, but it was kind of like you would order a file, log off, come back a few hours later, and it might have been transferred.
The sysadmins had to mirror everything every night and pull the whole thing down, so it was very manual. And that's, I think, when I was reading your article, the guy said one of the reasons he was quitting is because since he brought the thing up in the 80s, he was never able to take a vacation. I mean, he had to be there uptime, you know?
Right.
Back before Facebook.
Right. Exactly.
Well, we used FidoNet to distribute our zine, get it out to the other bulletin boards. Favorite BBS game of all times? Trade Wars. I love Trade Wars.
Was that a mod or what was?
No. It was a turn-based space game. You'd go in and you would your captain's spaceship. You'd go and do some trading. Other people would have to log in and play their turns and stuff. So you come back and find out that all your fighters were wiped out in this one battle. And so, none of that immediate gratification.
Everything was super slow. Yeah, because there were even role-playing games that we would play. They were called MUDs. I forget what it is.
Yeah, MUDs. Multi-user or something or another.
Dungeon, maybe, or something to start with. But you could do all these different
and
things.
And mushes.
Yeah, but it was so slow. Because you would put
and
in...
And mucks,
You'd put in your turn, and then it was a week before it would come back to you. And then they'd get really antsy if you didn't hit it within a couple hours,
Right.
Because it was a lot of people.
Multi-user was just something really weird back then. All right, it's still really weird right now. It's just faster weird. 713-526-5738. You can interrupt our trip down memory lane if you like. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, I see somebody in the queue.
We do have someone in the queue.
Who is it?
All right, up first on the second half of the show, we're going to take Paul.
Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm calling because I'm going crazy with using Skype on Linux. I'm able to hear the sound, and it starts 4.0 or 2.1, I think, that's the versions that I use. But for some reason, the microphone doesn't work.
Have you what sound system are you using? Do you know? Or let's even back up. What distribution are you running?
CentOS, I have 5.5, 5.7, and 6.2.
All on the same machine, and none of them are picking up the mic?
No, I have several machines, and each one is different.
Oh, so the machine that you're having issues with, what distribution is it running?
I tried them on all three.
Oh, so okay, it's not working on any of them. Okay.
Yeah, so it's not a hardware problem, which I thought it was.
Can you get the mic to work under other Linux packages like Audacity or just Sound Record or anything like that?
Yeah, I tried that too.
Will it record sound?
No.
So you don't have your mic.
Have you found, do you know if you're using ALSA as your sound subsystem? Do you know what you're using?
Yeah, I tried to install everything from ALSA and still doesn't work.
And you brought up the ALSA mixer and actually made sure that the mic levels were up?
Actually, I start ALSA mixer on my command line, and I'm able to, tweak with the thing, but still no sound. I mean, no voice.
Can't record, so it's... And you've taken... I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer. You've taken the mic, and the mic actually works in other machines.
Yeah, actually, I tried it on a Windows machine, and it works, but in here, it doesn't work. So, I mean, I'm thinking, okay, well, what about hardware? Something that will make... Skype work.
I mean, one thing you could do if you wanted to, I'm not saying do an end run around the sound card that's going on in there. I'm kind of clueless as to what it could be. But you could go. They do make a lot of headsets with USB stuff to where you're more or less you're getting a USB audio chipset. So you're not actually using the onboard. I don't know if it's like ACS 97 or what the onboard system is. They're all desktops.
Yeah, but according to what I was told is if the microphone doesn't work on the machine, you put on the pink port, put a microphone and you're getting any sound, you won't get any sound with the USB headset.
Well, I don't know what the deal is. You can't get the mic to work under any circumstance under any Linux program.
Okay.
No, it's a question. Have you ever been able to get a mic, that microphone to work under Linux? Well, under CentOS?
I have been trying, everything.
The question is, did it ever work? Ever?
No,
No. Okay. That's what we're looking
for. Okay. We'll do this. This is what I would do. Go get a couple of, you're saying you're using CentOS. CentOS is good. CentOS to me is much more of a server operating system. In fact, it's the community enterprise operating system. That's what CentOS stands for. So it's not a desktop machine. CentOS is designed for serving web pages, for running Java stacks, for running all kinds of development stacks out there in production environments. You may be better served with a Linux distribution that's geared towards desktop. But what you can do, go get a couple of live CDs. Like, go get Ubuntu. Maybe even, like, go get an old Nopic CD or something. And what you want to do is you want to boot into those live CDs, see if your microphone works under those. And if they do, type, have you used DMessage before?
Yes, I did.
So do that. And now what you want to do then when you do that, you want to look for what sound drivers were loaded up. And you want to see what is different between how the hardware was loaded up, you know, with the Linux kernel under the bootable CDs, where hopefully your mic will work, and what changed under CentOS. So now the bad news is you might have to, like, do some tinkering with CentOS to get it to work. The good news is that if you're using Yum, I'm assuming you're using Yum to keep all your packages up to date and everything, there are some other repositories that you can tie into that will replace different subsystems of CentOS, like all your sound, and you can, like, tie into a different kind of sound configuration versus just tying into the regular sound one. But that's the first thing you need to know, is you need to be able to get that up and going under Linux drivers, and probably the best way to do it would be to get a bootable CD that's going to try and auto-detect your sound setup along with your mic, and then when you find one that does, see what that OS did, you know, see what that distribution did to get it going, and then you mirror that in CentOS, if you want to stick with CentOS. You follow me?
Yeah, I follow.
Okay. I mean, that's what I would do. Try and get it under some other operating system, and then take those changes and force it into CentOS. Like I said, CentOS is really geared more for the server side, not so much for desktop and media and things like that.
Okay, great.
All right, well, good luck.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, I'm looking for, now I just maybe want to see if I could find anything about the crew of a milk bar.
Old BBS stuff?
Old BBS
stuff. Was that a clip from A Clockwork Orange, or was that?
That was a clip from A Clockwork Orange, but I did find the Houston 713 BBS list from 1992.
I mean, the deal is all these phone numbers would change so quickly back in the day that I think to maintain it, it wasn't just so much a dedication of time. You actually would run out some telephone expenses calling to make sure that these numbers were still good.
Well, they'd have to run the BBS. A lot of these BBSs would only run, like, late night. So when they had been the person who owned the BBS, you know, they had one phone line.
Right, right. And they did some of the early ones, right?
They didn't want to.
But some people had some serious hardware. Some people had multiple lines in their homes.
You could do, like, up until, I guess, when the whole BBS thing kind of peaked, you could get 64 modems in a DX2 and a 486. It would support, you know, 64 right. discrete lines.
Our Neosoft, our dial-up servers had U.S. Robotics external modems cracked open and mounted into this rack and all wired into a system running even the PPP dial-up was going into a BST box.
With Ethernet now, I mean, everything kind of goes over the same shared wire, but back then when you dialed in, you were dialing into another modem on the other end. I mean, it was actually a physical box.
Right, it was
box,
a physical
box,
yeah.
So it had to be a one-to-one kind of relationship, you know.
Very one-to-one. All right, 713-526-5738 as he cocks his head and looks puzzled at the topic for the next call. Grimhouse, who do we have?
All right, up next, we are going to take Elliot.
Green, I've got a question about Ubuntu. Do you need antivirus software on Ubuntu?
Yes.
You do?
No.
Okay.
Clam AV makes a package for Linux that you could run if you want to run it. The best thing you can do is just run the updater, keep everything up to date. And if you want to, instead of getting viruses, what you need to run is you need to run like a root kit checker. There's a CHK root kit, and there's also RK Hunter, which stands for Rootkit Hunter. You can install both of those through the package manager, put them on cron, or run a manual every once in a while, and that's the main thing you want to look for, is people getting in there, doing something to the kernel, and that should ferret anything else out that hackers would do. If you really want to get paranoid, you can get like an intrusion detection system and run that.
Sure.
But there's stuff like that. There's not necessarily like antivirus packages like you'd find on Windows.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. I was looking at this old BBS phone list, and it's kind of funny because, 713 was the only area code we had. And so all the phone numbers are just seven digits. Did you ever dial seven digits?
Yes.
It made those redialings a lot faster.
713-526-5738.
Or if you're in 1992, 526-5738.
You could tell by just someone's phone number what part of town they lived in, too. You kind of knew what area they are. Now with, you know, the 281s, the 832s, you've got no idea. It doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, it doesn't. It's a block of cell phone numbers or something.
Right.
The people on IRC are wailing and gnashing their teeth because none of the other hosts are on.
Oh, I didn't even load it up today.
And,
sorry.
And so Kojo's jumping up and down and trying to make me ask if anybody remembers the public software library, which was, I guess, a BBS that was in Houston.
I vaguely remember the name of it. We ran at one point. In an earlier story, we did a story generally on BBSs. It was like probably one of the first technology stories I did at the Chronicle. And we ran the complete Houston BBS phone number list in the newspaper. And took up a whole page.
Wow.
When we ran that.
That was costly.
It was costly. But hey, you know.
That was the heyday of print.
That was the heyday of print, man. Kill another tree.
713-526-5738. If you've got a computer question, we're here to help. This is Technology Bytes.
713-526-KPFT. I just found a copy of the old zine that I wrote for. And in the zine there, one of the writers talked about there's a plan to make the Corova Milk Bar a training ground where docs and Unix users can be had for those who are willing to put in the time and study necessary to use NixPub capabilities properly. Log on to Corova and leave email to sysopsquid if you're interested. Tomorrow belongs to us. This was the Worldview Volume 1, Issue 9. Trying to remember the date on that. What's that? What are the date listed?
Is that public? Is it out there?
Oh, yeah. If you Google search Worldview, it was actually called the Weltanschauung. For some reason,
throw it in IRC. Do you mind throwing it?
Oh, sure. Here, I'll throw this. This is... Worldview, Volume 1, Issue 9, and I'll throw that on the IRC, but we were pretty full of ourselves back then. Not like we're full of ourselves now, but, you know, this was in the heyday of the first Gulf War.
Right.
To put that in perspective for you, there was,
you know... For you kids, that's the time frame that the Big Lebowski is set in.
So really the internet was starting to happen. This freedom of speech thing was starting to happen. There was almost kind of a utopian view of what the internet could be, which was quickly squashed by all the major telecoms coming to play. But, you know, I remember at Neosoft when somebody had suggested that, you know, well, we should go out and register all the domain names for all the states and stuff like that. And we're like, no, everybody should just have one domain name, and that should be it. And then, of course, people just saw that, just went and got them and squatted and made their monies. But, you know, back in the day, we believed that this was kind of cool.
I liked how in that story I wrote, Dave Walkenschwanz was complaining about all the big guys getting into the business, and he lists AOL and CompuServe, Neosoft. a big guys,
yeah.
Locally, it was the largest internet provider at the time, locally.
All right, looks like we got some calls in the queue. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse is standing by. Who do we have?
All right, up next, we're going to take Steve.
Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. And I had a couple of simple questions about an HP notebook computer. I bought it back in December, so it's relatively new. It runs under Windows 7. It seems like occasionally the clock that appears on the desktop is a couple of hours off. And I don't know if it's just from lack of use, or I don't think the battery's ever been totally discharged or anything like that. It just doesn't seem to keep up. Is this something I should be concerned about?
Now, when you reboot the computer completely, does it come back to the correct time?
You know, I'm not sure that it did. Often, what I do is just go and change the clock till it's correct.
Is it always off by exactly 2 hours? Hello?
Yes, I'm thinking about that. I can't say that it is. It's normal, but you know, it seems like the last few times, it seems like it has been off by a certain increment of time. You know,
how old is the computer?
I bought it in December of last year.
December of last year, so you've got Windows 7 on there?
That's correct.
Now, the question is whether it's losing time, like, because a computer will lose time while the operating system is running if there's a bunch of junk or the operating system isn't running right. But then there's also situations where it'll lose time, like, if you don't have your time zone set correctly.
Okay, so those are...
But the time zone would make the clock off by exactly an hour or 2 hours or 6 hours or whatever time zone you had it set for. Right. It wouldn't be off by 32 minutes.
Exactly, or 13 minutes the next time.
Right, so if this was bought in December of last year and you're having a problem, I would contact the manufacturer and have them troubleshoot it while it's under warranty.
Sure.
But the question I have is, if you reboot it, does it come up to the correct time, or does it come up to the correct time plus or minus a certain number of hours?
Okay, well, that'll give me something to do next time that I notice the problem. I'll just go ahead and reboot it. But the other thing I had is, at one time I was trying to use HDMI connection to a television, and I thought I had it actually working, but now I don't seem to be able to connect through an HDMI cable through the television. It doesn't seem to recognize a television or that type of thing. Does this sound more like a software or a hardware problem?
Possibly a cable problem.
Yeah, I've tried several cables as well, but I guess what I should do is keep trying cables and...
Well, if you tried several cables, it's probably not the cable. It could be a problem with the connection. Could be a problem with the motherboard. Have you looked in the device manager to see if the HDMI port is active?
No, I haven't. I'm not really sure how to get to device manager with Windows 7.
Just go to the search bar in the start menu. Just type device manager and hit enter.
Okay, device. And then there's device manager. Let's go to that.
Yep.
See what it says. And that should tell me...
And you'll see all your devices down the side. There should be an HDMI option there. And if it doesn't have any odd symbols next to it, like an exclamation point or a yellow triangle, it should be fine.
Okay, well, I'm not seeing HDMI in there. I'm seeing stuff like battery, computer, disk drive, display adapter.
You wouldn't see HDMI in there, would you?
Yes, look under, open the display adapter.
Here you go. Let's go to that. That's visible.
Open that up.
Then it says under display adapters, Intel HD graphics family.
I don't know that I agree that the HDMI would show up under your display adapters. I would think it would show up if it shows up somewhere like a USB port.
But it's not a USB port.
It's not video either necessarily, because it carries audio
too. It should be its own notation.
Right, there should be like HDMI.
Right. So if you're not seeing anything, it could be that it's not active. That there's something wrong with it.
Again,
talk to the manufacturer.
It sounds like you're having a number of problems with the PC or the laptop, so you might want to put a call into their support while it's under warranty.
It's generally my understanding, my history, it's not the PC but the user, so that's why I was calling to ask you guys, and maybe you can set me straight. So that's what I'll do. I'll call HP.
Take advantage, because they can go through and they'll say, here's what we need to look for, and they can walk you through it. I mean, that kind of conversation on a radio show is less entertaining than we like, but with their support, they'll be able to walk through and check this and check that and...
Okay, well, next time I'll be a little better prepared and have a dirty joke for you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air. We got one call in the queue, and all the lines are open, and a half hour left in the show. So,
well, it's not necessarily to pass the guy off either, but I mean, if you've got something that's a little bit flaky and it's still under warranty, you should really take the, you know, exercise your chance to get a brand new piece of hardware versus, you know, wait a few weeks and have it, you know,
yeah,
yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly the point I wanted to make, is that, you know, if you do have hardware and it's acting strange and you can't pinpoint it, you know, at least get a get it documented with the manufacturer that you're having a problem, and pursue that, because if it turns out to be hardware
and it's like a laptop and it's under warranty, your best option is going to be to have it repaired under warranty, because they'll probably either replace the system or at least replace the system board, send a tech to you, or have you take it in somewhere. It's not like, you know, there's just like this setting that's off that you're going to click it and everything's going to start working necessarily.
Right, and if you have to do something like replace a motherboard because it's defective, you want to do that before the warranty runs out, because that's really expensive.
I've heard horror stories, but I've also heard like really cool stories where someone sent like, you know, last year's model of laptop off and they got a bump up back because they didn't have any more of those in stock. Right. I mean, good things happen too. You know, you can come out with a lot more than you went in with.
Right.
All right. Groovehouse, well, I see he's screening a call right now, so... Oh, there he goes. He's going to put on his headphones, come back and turn his mic on.
I'm here to do my job.
I know that. I'm not suggesting.
Allow me to push a couple buttons, and then I'll be right back. Here I am. Let's take a call.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Whoa, Nelly.
I love this job.
I love having you in this job.
I don't get to push the button. Oh, it hurts.
I know. Well, that's why I was saying Groovehouse sounds like he's screening a call. Oh, he's putting his headphones on. He's turning up his mic.
And here we are.
I was teeing it all up, and I was going to swat the ball with my golf stick.
I thought you guys were going to push the button.
We weren't. We were trying to extend and give you the opportunity to glide right into a perfect segue.
Not on your watch, buddy.
Okay.
Press the button, Barrett.
John, you're up.
All right, let's take John.
John, you're on the air thanks to the good nature and work of Groovehouse.
Okay, thank you, Groovehouse. Yes, this is John. I've got a problem here. I did a new installation of an old Windows XP today, and for some reason or other, it won't hook up to the Internet. Now, the computer I'm on is well hooked up to the Internet. It's dual boot. And I'm running Kubuntu on a different hard drive on it, and been on and off the Internet all day long with it. But for some reason or other, I've tried everything I can, and can't get this new installation to hook up. Now, I have used this installation disk before on several other computers and haven't had any problem with it.
Now, when you talk, so you have this installation disk, it's just XP, right?
Yes.
It's not the OEM disk that came with your particular model, you know, brand of computer. So chances are it may not have installed drivers for your Ethernet.
Uh-huh.
And which means that you have to go and get the drivers for your Ethernet card so it can connect to your router or your modem and get online. Have you checked the device manager to make sure that your Ethernet?
No, sir, I haven't.
All right.
No, sir, I haven't.
Who makes the computer?
Okay, the computer is a Dell OptiFlex.
All right, so go to support.dell.com. You'll probably have to do this on a computer that you can connect to the Internet with. Go to support.dell.com. You can type in your model number, computer, and get the list of drivers that you can download. You can download the installer for the Ethernet and then bring that over, like put it on a USB stick or burn it to a disk or something and bring it over to the computer that you installed XP on and install it. And hopefully that'll get your Ethernet up and running.
Yeah, because, you know, I have used this disk on an e-machine.
Right, but XP doesn't have all the drivers for all the various devices, so it'll install the operating system and it'll do its best to load drivers for the various components. But Dell is notorious about having hardware that's not, you know, an XP really is kind of limited in the number of drivers that it includes with the operating system. So you have to get those drivers from the manufacturer for your hardware. The good news is, because it's a Dell, Dell has all the drivers available for download. Unfortunately for you, the one driver you need is the one to get you online, so you have to do that on another computer.
Yeah, and I'll have to do that on a Windows machine, too. I can't do it from a Kubuntu, right?
You can do it from Ubuntu because it's just an EXE that you're going to need to install, I mean, download and get to a disk that you can then transfer over to the XP
computer. Ubuntu probably picked up your Ethernet driver, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You can
okay.
do it from Ubuntu, then.
Like I said, this is a dual boot machine, and, you know, I've got Kubuntu on it.
Well, if you have the ability to boot up into Ubuntu, go to the Dell site, download the driver, and put it onto some media that you can then turn around and boot into XP and then retrieve that file and install it, you should be fine.
Got it. Got it. Okay, well, I'll try that. I've been trying stuff up, found all over the Internet, and been driving me nuts, basically. And I tried calling Dell, but it was basically, if you're not going to give us any money, we don't want to talk to you. And, all the numbers I had for Microsoft are no longer available. So,
right.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your help and love your show. Been listening to it for several years. I was hoping I'd have an opportunity to call y'all and whine about something.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So, Peter, did you do a story about Larry Ellison buying one of the Hawaiian Islands?
No.
It's true.
No, I didn't see that.
I think it's true. It's all over Twitter. I thought it was an Onion story at first, but apparently he's buying Lanai, which is like the sixth largest Hawaiian island. He's buying 98% of it. I don't know what's on the other 2%, maybe a military base or something, but he is buying it. That's like an Onion story.
I saw something on that, but I thought it was a joke.
It's not a joke. Yeah, well, it may be a joke in its own right, but it's real, apparently.
Jeez.
Are other Hawaiian islands for sale? Because, you know.
I don't know.
If they were, could you afford to buy one?
Yeah, what's the commission?
Oh, hells yeah.
What's the commission?
Oh, yeah. On that,
okay, that real estate agent. Yeah, I'm gonna Hawaii.
I went to the Classy Chassis Auto Show a couple of weekends ago. A friend of mine is involved with putting that on. And they have, it's a fundraiser, I think, for muscular dystrophy or something, a cerebral palsy. It's a fundraiser, and they have this big gala on Saturday night where all these, you know, hoity-toity rich people come in and have dinner amongst the cars. And they have, you know, music and stuff. And they have auctions. And I asked my friend, I said, you know, it doesn't ever seem like there's a lot of people here. It's Reliant Stadium, of course, it kind of dwarfs the whole thing. But it never seems like there's a lot of people. So I'm not thinking you raise the bulk of your money for the charity on the admission fee to the car show. I said, he said, no, most of our money comes from donations and from our auction. And I said, well, what's the best auction thing that you got for the gala? And he said, well, this year we're auctioning off. It's a private tour of Jay Leno's garage during the time that that Bugatti will be there filming a commercial for the new Veyron. And so it includes first class airfare for two to California to go to the garage, and they're going to get a ride in the Bugatti Veyron with a Bugatti driver down Coast Highway 1. And I was like, I would totally buy that. I would. And I said, what do you think that's going to go for? I think she said, I think the opening bid for that's like $10,000. So I didn't go to the gala and cast my light. So I was thinking, that reminded me when you said you could totally buy a Hawaiian island, like if there was one available.
Sure.
Yeah, on the Chronicle salary.
Wait,
on your internet hero salary.
Exactly. On my fantasy salary.
Dwight owns the other
fantasy
2%.
Island with a fantasy salary.
Yeah, well, you can just go to your fantasy island right now. Just
my close, happy place.
Just close
go to my
rides.
Happy place. Oh.
Ooh.
Dwight, the flame! Who invited the midget? Right. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Groovehouse?
Yes.
Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to take Barbara.
Push the button. Barbara.
Am I on the line now?
You're on the air, even.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. The bottom line is two things. One, people are living on Lanai, and I'm wondering if they're living on the little bit he didn't buy, or whether they're going to be renting from him, or whether they're going to be moving.
Maybe he bought the population as well.
Shell necklaces yes. that they sell.
Maybe he is now, you know, the self-imposed dictator of that island.
The king of Lanai.
Everybody.
The king of Lanai.
Everybody off my island.
So whatever they're going to do, it should be interesting.
Well, maybe he'll inherit a volcano to go with that.
No, I don't think so. The geology does not have that. So bottom line here is...
Bottom line, that was not the bottom line. You said the other one was the bottom line.
No, there was a bottom line with 2 points.
Oh, okay.
The prosaic question that I have is, I'm fairly common. You know, I've been a librarian and computers and all that, but, you know, I'm at that point now. I want to have four... printers that I can access, and rather than plugging and unplugging all the time, kind of set it up for me and tell me what I should do to have,
do you have the
printer ready to go.
Do you have the printers already?
Well, the printers are already. I mean, they're working and all that. One
now, that's a question.
Is color
no, stop for a second. You want
I'm trying to line this up, so I was just need to collect a little data. So you already have four printers.
Got it.
That's true?
Yes.
Are the printers USB or are they parallel?
USB.
USB. So you have four USB printers. Now, do you have a dedicated computer to hook these up to?
Yes.
So what I would probably do is I would consider if you don't have four USB ports on that computer, then I would get a USB hub that would allow you to plug four USB devices into a single USB port.
Got it. Okay.
Or you could get a print server. You could get a USB print server so you wouldn't even have to have the printers necessarily connected to the computer.
Yeah, if the computer rebooted or if the computer went off, you could still print from wherever that machine wouldn't have to be up.
Are you talking about multiple computers or just one computer?
One computer in my home, not internet, not
so one computer printing the four potential printers all on at the same time. So USB hub.
Okay. Simple as that.
Simple as that.
Okay.
No volcanoes.
It's going to be called Ellis Island.
So, this is going to be very interesting about Lanai. I'm glad you mentioned that. Very good.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks. I still think he might get a volcano. I mean, isn't that why it is a volcano?
Apparently, it was already privately owned. A company called Castle and Cook sold it to him. Mm. The price, apparently the asking price was between $500 and $600 million when it was up for sale, which, you know, is pocket change for the owner, for the founder of Oracle. And it has, let's see.
Kojo says you can become a stripper and buy the island with your stripper money.
All right, I'm on it.
There's already been a stripper.
Here's your first dog, right?
from the Associated Press, the deal involves 88,000 acres of land plus two resorts, two golf courses, a stable, and various residential and commercial buildings. And Ellison plans to pay cash. One, three.
Larry and the volcano.
Larry and the volcano. The deal should result in new jobs, economic stimulus, and a reinvigorated local tourism industry, the application said.
Because everybody wants to go hang out with Larry.
Hang out with Larry on the beach. He apparently already had a presence on the island.
Apparently. All right. 713-526-5738. Gesundheit, Dwight. Gesundheit.
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit. All right, 713-526-5738. You're calling into the Inkjet Printer Show. Who's up next with a printer question?
All right, up next, we're going to take Cal.
Cal, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Very good. I have a quick question. I think it should be easy, but I can't figure it out. I have a Lexmark Pro 710, and I like to be able to print in the draft mode and duplex as much as I can. And whenever I go to select that, you know, in the property section of the printer box up, you know, comes open, it never seems to retain it once it prints out that way. And then I go to print something else out a minute later. It always goes back to using tons of ink and, you know, not being able to duplex. And so I don't think I'm doing something right, but it just doesn't seem, and I tried saving it, but the settings, and it doesn't seem to work.
Are you working from the printer software or from the driver that Windows uses to print?
I believe it's the printer software because that's the one that has all the several different tabs worth of information. Like,
are there any settings in there that allow you to declare what the default setting is? In other words, a lot of them, if you go into the settings for the settings, you will see an area that says set default, and it will let you pick one and stick to it.
Okay, well, I have to look at the default part. I thought I was just clicking on what I wanted and then
that will do it for that one time, but I think, and a lot of, I mean, I don't know, I'm not familiar with Lexmark specific, but a lot of them have the ability to set a default. The other thing you might try doing is going into the printer setting in the printer area in the control panel and seeing if you can set it from there as opposed to the software.
When I go from the control panel, that's where it gives me the option to set a specific printer as the default one, but I don't think it enables or allows me to select the settings
Right click on the printer that's designated as your default printer, uh-huh. and do properties, or there may be some other option in there depending on the printer driver, and that may bring up this Windows version of the printer.
Okay.
Software. Try that if you can't find the default settings in the software itself.
Okay. Yeah, I will try that then.
Okay. All right.
Very good.
Luck.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, here's my dilemma. I have, I'm on Twitter, right? That's a dilemma into itself. And so I get a follow request, from somebody, and they are following 1,083 people, but they're being followed by over 10,000, almost 11,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So this one of those, so it's this person interested in my, he's a photographer apparently. So if I follow him back, is he just looking for followers and he goes back through and unfollows to keep...
I don't know. You'll find out when you follow him.
I don't know. I don't trust these.
If he looks interesting, if someone looks interesting... I'm like that. I follow, like, about, 1,200 people.
Right.
But I've got, like 17,000 followers.
Right.
So, but... And I follow people who are interesting. So... If you go and
that's the mentality. That's the mentality you got to maintain. It's like
right. I want somebody. I want my feed. The people that I'm seeing to be interesting and worthwhile. And if the guy is just retweeting and just respond, nothing interesting. I don't follow.
I would go to his profile, see if he's got a website. Go see his website.
His work is good. He seems
check his Twitter stream. If he's
but I don't want to be I don't want to be suckered into following him just to, so he picks up another follower to add to his 10,000 right. 11,000. I don't want to be that guy.
You got to just take that chance. It's Twitter. I mean, you can always unfollow.
That's true.
That's that. To me, that
I know that's I mean, not, that's probably an overthinking of the whole thing.
And throwing the baby out of the bathwater. If he's interesting, he may be worth following.
Okay.
But if he's just going to retweet stuff.
No, it doesn't look like he's doing that.
Or
he's,
do like 15 replies to different people who have asked questions. Or if he's going to be hosting a contest or something and you've got to retweet something.
No.
Forget all that, you know.
This guy looks like he's professionally shot like the guy with that beret and the big mustache. Mythbusters.
Oh,
Mythbusters.
Che Guevara?
Yeah, it's called Guerrilla Warfare or something, yeah.
Oh, Che Guevara? No. All right. 713-526-5738. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Actually, about 11 minutes.
Well, so while we're waiting for a call, I have a cautionary tale for when you get what you imagine for vacation. As you may have noticed, I missed the show last week. But
who is this?
Pete, weren't here last week?
Went way up north and was at a lake, at a resort on a lake that's in the middle of a national forest. There's like 20 cabins on this fairly large lake. Virtually no internet. So every time any of you techies out there who are like, you know what, I want to go on vacation. I want to just totally disconnect. I want to be unhooked from all that internet stuff. I don't want to be checking my – I don't want my phone. I don't want to be getting emails on my phone, Twitter, any of it. I did that, because basically I had no choice. There's – if you stood out on the end of the dock, you could get a couple bars on a phone, but you weren't getting data. And you could go into the lodge and get internet – But while I was on the short window of my vacation where that was the case, every single server that I have any responsibility for at one time or another had an issue during that time.
Including me.
Well, but it's the most bizarre coincidence that the only time that I'm not in how many months where other than if I'm asleep that I'm not pretty much on the internet is the time when everything chooses to just go to hell. So, and the sad part is, I mean, this resort, it was just beautiful up there. I mean, it was unbelievable. I would love to go longer, but I'm afraid what would happen. I would come back and have nothing. The whole internet would be gone and, apes would be running the cities, the whole deal. And actually, this was up in northern Minnesota in Duluth, and we left yesterday, and immediately after we left, they received 9 inches of rain, and the city is a disaster area, and even there was a polar bear escaped in the zoo.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, I feel bad for my relatives that I saw up there, because it's like, I had this great vacation, was up there for a wedding, and then whammo.
Washed away.
But anyways, so yeah, so it took me, of course, when you're off like that, I'm at some lodge sitting at a bar with my MacBook Air. And I, of course, the cool plus side is it, the battery lasts long enough that I got pretty much everything done that I needed to, even though I forgot the power brick at home. So that was cool, but it took me about 2.5 hours to do something that at home would have been about 5 minutes to solve. So that kind of sucked, but anyway, so whenever you think about, oh, hey, yeah, man, I want to disconnect, maybe the deal is just don't look at your computer for an hour or two, but stay connected. It might work better.
All right, could you use another 5 or 6 minutes? No calls in the queue.
Still no calls.
713-526-5738. What?
I added water cooling, which I thought was going to be to this. I built kind of a
oh, yeah. Tell us about the computer you built.
Well, I probably just should have bought a new MacBook Pro by the time I've thrown as much stuff thrown into it. No, I just wanted kind of a new machine, a new Windows machine to play a game, just like one game, mainly because Skyrim, the load times on the Xbox 360 were just killing me, because I don't have a lot of time to game. So, like, waiting there for, like, a minute.
Plus, you wanted to do something with that
Vespa.
You're
complaining about a minute?
It wasn't a minute. I mean, it's, you know, it's a good chunk of time. And I really just was looking for an excuse to build a rig again. Boy. So I actually, I cleaned
so you
out.
Had to, so not only did you build the rig, did you buy a PC version of Skyrim as well?
Not yet. I just got it built. Okay. I downloaded the World of Warcraft client, and it just doesn't really do anything. If anything, it looks kind of cheapy now, because, you know, I'm rendering everything, but it's, you know, it's kind of like when you see HD content, it just looks a little bit too real.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is. So I'd like to get Skyrim, because it just has a lot of, you know, it has a theme and kind of a mood to it. It looks kind of dark. The graphics right. Really good. It's kind of immersive. But yeah, I always wanted to liquid cool a rig, and I thought I was going to have to do a ton of work, but there are so many kits out there now. You can go, like, to Micro Center in Houston and some retail place and actually buy liquid cooling, so it's not that big of a deal anymore.
No,
it's going to be all elite, but I'm like, now it's passe. It's like, oh.
What about, do you have, like, blinking LED lights?
No, I passed on that. I thought about that. I opened up an old case, and I was going to put everything into the old case, but it had, like, cases and cold cathode tubes in
cathode?
There.
Cathode?
Cold cathode tubes, CCTs. Yeah, old lights. And just a whole bunch of, like, a randomly weird half-inflated balloon. I put the case back on there and put it back up, because compressed air wasn't going to take care of what was in that case. I don't even know how this stuff got in there. So it's, yeah, we bought a new case too. And we got calls.
We
have calls.
No,
I bought a new case.
You said we bought a new case.
Oh, I meant, yeah, just
the
me.
The royal we?
Just me. Me and my my dust balls and my, you know, cold cathode tubes.
I'm so sad, loaded dust balls. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to take Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, great show, guys. Quick question for you. I see that they got the new Galaxy 3 coming out, cell phone-wise, which is a halfway decent cell phone platform, I'm told. Now, but when's the iPhone 5 going to come out with a decent screen, size-wise?
Well, only Apple knows.
The rumors are that there will be a 16:9 larger screen this fall, but you don't know until Apple makes the official announcement.
Yeah, there may not be, you know.
Do you have, I understand you guys don't have crystal balls and what have you.
No, just dust balls.
No, steel. We have balls.
Balls
steel.
Of steel, yes.
But, that means, is there a particular website that's got better,
nobody knows.
Control than others out there?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. The rumor is a 4-inch, slightly larger screen and a 16:9, in a 16:9 aspect ratio, LTE capabilities, available sometime in October. The credence for the October date, that's when iOS 6 is expected to be out in the fall, Microsoft said. Apple said they're going to want to make the Christmas selling season. So you can kind of look around there, but it may not have a different screen size. It may not have LTE, although that's pretty much, a good bet, given the iPad has, new iPad has it. But you can't tell. You can't know anything for sure. And, you know, I wouldn't bet the farm on the screen size.
Speaking of the screens, I saw the best tweet after the Apple announcement last week. Somebody tweeted that the Retina display on the new MacBook Pro was so sharp that you could see the tears of the Chinese child workers who assembled it on it.
That's bad. What's the best way to catch a fish?
We don't know.
Have someone throw it to you.
Ba-dum boom.
Ba-dum bum.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Have a good night.
All right. You know, if you want to drive yourself absolutely bonkers, just Google iPhone 5 rumors. You know, there was a, I mean, it's, there's some really good, this guy rendered some fake photos of the allegedly leaked iPhone 5, and it was so good that I think even Engadget kind of fell for it. The photo, the, what he'd done, it was so good. And so, you know, believable.
I don't really care what they're going to do with the iPhone 5. You know, I'm more curious about what the 6 is going to look like. You guys heard anything?
I have. It's coming out after the 5.
Whoa. Well, will it be the 5, or are they going to
keep
on the numbers? Or?
My prediction is that Apple will get rid of the numeric designation just like they did with the iPad and they've done with the MacBooks and the Airs and the iMacs and all that. It will just be
iPhone.
And not, it actually is not the iPhone.
It's just iPhone.
Right.
I thought they were going to go to the year number.
Or number? Or XP, perhaps. So
be iPhone XP. 2013.
The year number, that would be good.
No.
That's like Windows so successfully did with their operating systems.
Yes.
Hit me.
No, there was Windows 95, which came out almost in 96. There was...
I heard Apple's going to go to 2 versions. It's going to be the version we just released, and crap, everything else is bad.
The one you want and the one that we have. All right, well, we're about out of time, so we're going to nurse this last minute before we actually can hit the outro. But, yay! I was just reading this thing online, too, about the new MacBook Pro with the Retina display, and... for the photographer, it says it's really going to kind of make life miserable for photographers because, you know, when you have your images published to the web, people are going to come by. Unless you publish really good resolution versions of them, people are going to come by and see them, and they're going to kind of look like crap.
Yes, and people who run news websites are thinking the same thing, too. It's it makes, as more and more of these devices come up with these kind of high-resolution displays, it puts a challenge on the people who present images online.
I was just reading an article about a camera that they've made or they're working on that's got a sensor on it that takes pictures not in the megapixels, but the gigapixels. Like, it's a camera that will take... It will take a picture that is... It's twice as good as what you would see a person would see with 20/20 vision. So it's
what
image detail so amazing. Yeah, they've got the technology, and there's a phone out there that just came out that has a 41 megapixel camera.
Yeah, it's a Nokia.
The Nokia, yeah, 41 megapixel camera. One, and while I got time, one rumor that I saw floating around about the iPhone 5 or the new iPhone. There's a rumor, just a speculative rumor based on some plausible information that it may support interchangeable lenses.
Wow.
Well, that's a patent. They have a patent.
They have a patent for it, yes. But whether or not it'll be a feature in the new phone or not remains to be seen. But it's all getting crazy, people. That's why you need Technology Bites here to help rein it in for you. We appreciate you tuning in. If you're listening locally here on KPFT, you'll be listening to Vegan World Radio coming up next. If you're listening outside of the Houston area, check your local listings for what's coming up next. We'll see you next Wednesday night here on KPFT. For Technology Bites, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
Pushing the buttons, taking the calls, making stuff happen. Yay, Groove House.
Volunteering at KPFT? If so, come to our volunteer training session Friday, June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. located at KPFT Pacifica Radio, 419 Lovett Boulevard. We have opportunities in the news department and graphic design. In the production department, you can learn radio engineering or production assistance, fundraising, groundskeeping, building maintenance, or meet people and help us at any of the many events that KPFT does in the community. Add KPFT to your resume. Show the world you give of yourself and your time. Go to kpft.org and fill out a volunteer request form or call Anthony at 713-526-4000, extension 301. Come to the volunteer training session at the station on June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. You're listening to KPFT.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites?